podcast is powered by Tokensoft. Tokensoft is the all-in-one solution for Web3 projects. Identity verification, fundraising, distribution, and foundation management, we've got it all. Visit tokensoft.com to learn more.
Welcome to the Friend Zone presented by Tokensoft. Today we're here with Billy and Andrew from Intuition. Intuition is a decentralized knowledge graph for Web3. Billy and Andrew, it's a pleasure to have you here today.
Thank you so much for having us. Pleasure to be here.
If you'd like, we can start with some quick introductions, and then I'd love to learn more about the background of Intuition, how the idea came about.
Yeah, absolutely. Andrew, you want to kick us off with an intro, and then I will follow suit and do the same?
Sure. So I met Billy at ETH Denver 2 years ago when Intuition was a hackathon project. I had recently left JP Morgan, where I'd been a foreign exchange derivative sales and trader for about 8 years. Worked at Goldman before that in more of a lawyer capacity, and went to law school prior to that. So relatively new to the crypto space, although I guess it's been 2+ years now. So one of the few non-technical team members on Intuition, helping out with almost everything, because there are only a few of us that are not engineers or developers right now.
And what about you, Billy?
Yeah, I'm Billy. I did my undergrad in systems engineering. Started my career in 2012 doing something kind of random. I was like working at Caltech with the United States Geological Survey Office on this thing called the QuakeCatcher Network, which is this like decentralized seismic network. And around the same time got exposed to crypto. So I've been like involved in the crypto space since 2012. I've been involved with Ethereum since early 2014, living in San Francisco at that time, and just got lucky enough to be exposed early. Around the same time, helped start the blockchain consulting practice at Ernst & Young with a couple people, and then migrated over to Consensus, where I have been for 7 years, and I am still an advisor to Consensus. And along that way, I did a bunch of decentralized identity stuff. And so when I architect systems, I just always have this identity slant, and identity is always part of the picture because identity has a role to play in pretty much every use case. And so that is kind of like one of the impetuses for how Intuition came about. And I can very happy to segue into like that origin story, if that is the logical segue from here.
Yeah. And so you're bringing the seismic activity to the crypto space.
Is that right? Oh, I like that. Should that be my tagline?
Did you know Andy Beal or David Byrd from EY?
Yeah. They're great friends. Yep.
Good guys.
I love those guys.
Awesome. Yeah, it would be good to hear. Yeah, what's the background behind Intuition? You know, what sort of inspired Intuition to come about?
Yeah, so it's actually kind of nice because framing where it came from also helps frame where we're going. So where this arose from was last cycle, I was doing a ton of angel investing advisory stuff, and my unique value prop to people was like, hey, been in crypto for like over 10 years. Let me connect the dots for you. Let me tell you who's come before, who exists now, best practices, tooling, things of that nature, typical investor advisor stuff. And that was great, but I was on all these calls all the time and I didn't really like the calls. And so I was like, ooh, how can I like disintermediate myself here a little bit? And so what I did was I took my like Web3 knowledge and I put it into this little visual knowledge graph tool so that instead of needing to come to me to ask me so many questions, you could just go and like discover the information for yourself. So if you're looking for something about like, hey, do you have a connection to this layer two team? It's like, oh, here's the layer two circle. You click on that, you see the teams. You click on the teams, you see the people. Click on the people, see information about them. And that worked great. And at the time, it was kind of like the height of the cycle and there was infinite things happening. And like, I needed to keep track of everything somewhere. And like at the time I still do, but I had like a million browser tabs open. I have like a million other bookmarks that I still have never gone back to. I use Roam Research to take notes and tag things with things properly sometime, but it just like wasn't great for organizing my own life. And so what I started doing was like keeping track of all my Web3 stuff in this like visual knowledge graph. And in keeping track of it for me, it also kept track of it for all my portcos and my clients and my friends. And so like what I would use it for is like, okay, you know, I got a bridge over to Avalanche. Like, okay, what is the bridge that I like using? And then when I get there, the AMM is no longer Uniswap and SushiSwap anymore. It's like, Trader Joe and Pangolin swap. I'm like, okay, I don't want to have to like remember all of this stuff. And so I just captured it in this knowledge graph. And so then I thought, well, like, this is working great, but also it's just my knowledge. What if everyone's knowledge was in the knowledge graph? And what if people were like incentivized to add good data to the knowledge graph? That'd be pretty interesting. And I was like, I don't really know how to build that right now, but if we could build that, that seems like it could be pretty powerful. So I just got obsessed with the idea, started architecting it. And what it started to look like was this composition of all of these decentralized identity and data and finance primitives that had been emerging over the past couple of years. So that is where it came from. And that is also kind of where we're going.
You outsourced the memory retrieval of your brain. That's what you did.
Yeah, exactly. It's, yeah, I outsourced my intuition. Yeah.
And Andrew, what excites you the most about intuition and sort of, you know, building this knowledge graph?
Yeah. And I came to this space, you know, coming from a bank and foreign exchange, more interested in how underlying blockchain rails could improve things like Swift messaging for currency trade settlement, things like that. And so what Billy got me excited about with intuition, and it's not unique to intuition, but it's a unique application of the idea, is designing these systems and platforms where the platform is aligned with its users and contributors better than legacy systems. And so, you know, if you design it right, you're creating this system that contributes to a really powerful knowledge graph where the people contributing to it are directly rewarded for that contribution. And I'll be careful with words that I use, like ownership. But that's what excited me, is if you built it right and sparked it to life, that you could create something really powerful and self-sustaining.
I just felt your lawyer brain kick in.
It happens a lot. I can't help it.
And so what, how are you thinking about sort of the market positioning of a tool like this, and sort of like the go-to-market for it? What are like some of the first use cases that you see? You know, obviously there's been a good track record of this, you know, being used out there, but what's the go-to-market look like from here?
Yeah, no, that is a really good question, and like the question. And so like go-to-market from here is kind of like rooted in this kind of huge pain point for the ecosystem that I think we just want to solve generally. And so the go-to-market strategy is focused on like what I'm dubbing like the trustful interaction layer. And so what that means is right now in crypto, before you even get to the point of interacting with trustless code, which is like what we're doing here, like it's like this migration from subjective to objective trust systems. Like before you interact with trustless code, you have to trust a lot of things. Like you got to like install the right wallet, and you got to like interact with the right contracts and the right URLs, and you have to like listen to the right people. And it's just like, we're still trusting people so much, even though the whole point is to like not trust people as much. And so we think we can solve that by kind of just like crowdsourcing people's knowledge and people's intuition about the things in Web3. And so like, while this is like a broadly applicable thing, our goal is to help make Web3 a little bit more navigable and a little bit more secure, so that the Web3 experience isn't like, oh, I come in, I don't know anything, I don't know who to follow, I don't know what platforms to use. I come in, I immediately get phished, I lose all my money, and then like I never come back for 10 years because I'm just so disillusioned. Like that cannot be the experience that people have. And so like, that's what we want to focus on, is like, there's kind of like two paths here. One is like the centralized approach, where it's like you interact with like some sort of centralized curator of things. So, you know, maybe in Coinbase mobile wallet, they have like the 5 dApps that you can interact with. And it's like, that probably protects you and gets you interacting with the right things, but that's also very centralized and very limiting. So like, how can we get that same like trustful experience without the like being contained within like the confines that some centralized institution has set out for us? So that's kind of what we're trying to solve.
And so, you know, technically under the hood, how is intuition solving that?
Yeah. So basically like, the example I like to give here is like the data we need to have trustful interaction exists, but it exists in our heads. So like Web2 parallel, that probably hear me repeat a lot, is like, I've never written an Amazon review, I've never done a Yelp review, I've never done a LinkedIn endorsement, I've never edited Wikipedia, I do 5 stars on Uber every time because I don't care. And if you look at the data, 97% of people aren't contributing data to these platforms, And then conversely, we all use the data to make decisions every single day. Like even me as someone trying to solve the problem, I still go to Amazon. I'm like 5 stars, 10,000 reviews. Obviously, I'm going to buy this one, even though I know the data is flawed. And the problem isn't that the data doesn't exist. It's that the data exists in our heads. Because going back to my angel investing advisory thing, if you come to me and you ask me about like a person in Web3 I've worked with, or what wallet I use, or like what restaurants I like in Puerto Rico, I can tell you, but we have to have a conversation about it, and it's not super efficient. And so the way that we solve it is just like trying to build the right system where people actually want to express themselves a little bit more. And then capturing that data, not in some sort of centralized silo, but rather on this open permissionless decentralized knowledge graph, and then serving the data to the users at like the point of interaction. So like when like tangible example of what this could look like is like when you go to interact with a smart contract, instead of in your wallet, you just seeing a bunch of non-human readable jargon. It's like, oh, what is my intuition saying about the smart contract? So you go to your intuition tab in MetaMask. And it's like, oh, here's what the wisdom of the crowds is saying about this. It says, Quant Stamp says it's audited, so maybe I trust it. Or my DeFi degen friend has said that it's like a scam, so maybe I don't interact with it. So that's kind of like our approach there.
And also, I feel like with reviews, you know, I think a lot of people don't really review something unless they're really angry.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's like, you know, you're capturing the extremes. It's like, on one hand, you have people who are really pissed off, and they're giving it the zero star. And then on the positive side, it's pretty, I would assume it's probably just the companies themselves gaming the system. Like maybe there's some like really good people, but like the problem is, why would I write a review? Writing reviews gets me absolutely nothing. Is it like to help my fellow man generally? Like maybe I care about like my direct circle a little bit more. So like, imagine if, you know, you had an Amazon friends list, which you don't have right now. Like, I would love to see what my friends are saying about things. I don't care what like all these anonymous people are saying. Like one opinion of one person I trust means more to me than 10,000 anonymous reviews. And so like if I knew that my circle was going to find my reviews, maybe I was like I'd be a little bit more encouraged to leave them, because it's like I do it now, but it's in like a group chat or it's via a conversation. It's like not in something like Amazon.
I think our go to market, like Billy said, is focused on the Web3 space initially, where the problem of us having bad information about the things we're interacting with is particularly acute. But the problem is much broader than that. And so, you know, like in this second half, we're talking about how the information we have about the things we interact with, products that we buy, companies, people, it's bad everywhere. And it's because the information is fragmented across a lot of company-owned data silos. It's because the incentives are perverse or don't exist to share information. And so we think we're tackling something much broader than a Web3 niche, but that's just where we're starting. I think, you know, important to point out that what we're building too, in case it gets lost in the articulation, is ultimately a low-level platform that other people are meant to build on top of. And so we might have our own applications that intuition releases, but at the end of the day, it's a set of tools that other people are meant to use. And that knowledge graph is for everybody to contribute to and everybody to pull from.
And so it sounds like one component here is sort of the incentivization to provide data in the first place, whether you're emotionally charged or not.
Yes, that's correct.
And then the second component is sort of like the data storage and data retrieval. And then it feels like the third part is the part where you integrate into other apps. How do people pull this in to enrich sort of their applications?
Yeah, well said. That's kind of like the perfect framing. It's like, first, we need to get the data out there. Like right now, data is living in centralized silos and in people's heads. So we need to like allow it to escape all of those individual fragmented silos. Like once the data is being expressed, it's like, first, we got to figure out how we, like, what structure does the data take? So that's like the intermediary step between storage and expression, is like, what format is this in? Because what we're seeing right now in like attestation / verifiable credential / just like the world generally of data is like, rampant data fragmentation. And so it's like, it's really hard to reconcile data sets because everyone uses like different standards and different schemas. And it's like, okay, how do I know that this field in this schema means the same as this field in this schema? They both say like first name, this one says camel case, this one has a hyphen. Like, is it referencing the same first name? And so you need like inference and I don't know if we're getting better tools to be able to do it, but it's just messy. And so if we could like solve that problem at the point of expression, then it's like, okay, people are expressing themselves, the data is clean, and you're storing the data on this like open network. And then it becomes like the point of interaction where it's like, okay, now that the data is like in this neutral spot and it's not like gated behind like our walled garden, now like it becomes a single unified verifiable data lake that any application can integrate with. Anyone can publish data to this knowledge graph. Anyone can read data from it. So instead of like, it's kind of a paradigm shift in how you build applications potentially, where it's like, instead of people needing to worry about the data aspect of their platforms as much, the platforms become this like overlay on top of this like unified data set, which is, I think, like the ultimate goal here. And so then it's like, instead of, I mean, you can still have your data moat, you can still like encrypt data and maybe charge people to read it, but at least it's discoverable via this like one spot instead of being in all these like weird fragmented silos that are unreconcilable.
And where's the blockchain here?
Yeah, great question. So what's stored on, so like we will be deploying to some EVM based L2 soon, name TBD. But basically the on-chain component of this handles like all of the economic logic and also kind of like on-chain ability to do things with the state that now exists. So it kind of like keep track of both like the, so you think of the knowledge graph as just a bunch of nodes and edges. That's all you've got. You've got nodes and edges, just like some sort of neural network. Each node and each edge has some weight. So what's stored on-chain, is like the nodes and the edges, like the relationship, the things, the relationships between things, and then the weight of each thing. And so basically like you can think of it like kind of NFT architecture, where on chain you have references to off chain stuff. So in our system we have things called atoms and triples, which are just, they mean nothing in the outside of the context. I mean they do have definitions, but like in the context of intuition, what an atom is some concept, like a granular concept. This is the lowest level primitive. So a concept like an atom could be a person, it could be an organization, it could be a concept like Ethereum, it could be a word like trustworthy. So just like discrete units of information. And then you can compose them into RDF triples, which are like in the format of a sentence. So you have like subject, predicate, object, just like language. And then you can have like triples be atoms and other triples. So basically with just these two primitives, you can form like arbitrarily complex structures that are really clean, because all you have are, you just have atoms and triples, but then you can express anything with just these concepts. So the atoms are stored on chain. They have some URI that points to some off chain data. And then you have the triples, which are just like relationships between atoms and between triples. The relationships are stored on chain. Again, those are just like their references to off chain stuff. And then people can say, this is like a unique concept for us that I think like no one has cracked the nut of before, but it's like decoupling statements from attestations. So right now, like let's say like using present infrastructure, I want to claim Andrew Cox is my friend. I can do that. And I have to create a new like attestation to say that. And it's like a new object. And let's say Andrew has 10,000 friends, like each friend attestation is a new object. Whereas like, what if instead the paradigm was like, Andrew just had like one friendship statement attached to him. It's like, is Andrew Cox's friend? And then I can just say, yes, I am, or no, I'm not. Then you can just like, look at like, who is Andrew Cox's friend? And you can see who is presently attesting to being Andrew Cox's friend at that time. And so that is like where the weight comes from, is who is saying what at any given point in time. You have like statements that can be said by many people, or they can be like rejected by people. But anyway, I'm rambling a little bit, but that's kind of like the on-chain component of all of this.
Interesting. And what exactly does that look like under the hood on the on-chain component? Is this a smart contract that's interacted with? Is that where the sort of the logic engine sits? Or are things being timestamped, et cetera?
Yeah, so this is like happening at the smart contract level. So like we are just like all of our contracts are written in Solidity. We will deploy to like EVM based chains. They also, one piece I kind of like missed was like the economics of it. So like a big piece of this is like the economic incentives to like create data in the system. So you also kind of need the on-chain component for that. So for like to be able to flow the economic rewards to the appropriate parties, like you need something on chain. And it's like, okay, this person is presently saying this. We don't need to know what this is. This can live off chain, but we need to know that they're like saying something. And so we can then flow like revenue to the person who created the data in the first place.
And what does the user experience here look like?
That's a great question. Andrew, I saw you unmute. You want to go for it?
Yeah. I mean, all these things sound super technical, but at the end of the day, these attestations are just, you can say something about something, whether that's a person, a smart contract, and it's a signed message. So you can tell who said it, right? And then we aggregate that information. So now like everyone has rich metadata about the things they've said about things and the things that have been said about them. And that applies not just to people, but anything that can have a decentralized identity or a digital identity. And so the user experience is our whole goal from day one was to make it not as complex as the explanation of what's happening under the hood. And so we will have something that feels like Etherscan, but for intuition, where you can query these semantic triples and the components of them, like how many people have used trustworthy and what are the claims that it's involved in. But like I said, the whole idea is we're building a toolkit that's meant to be easily integrated into other more use case specific applications. And so really, it could be anything. But you know, to kind of paint the picture of what a more simplified end user experience could look like, you could have a social app where people make posts and the heart emoji on a post, you could click it and that could be an attestation. And if I clicked it, it could be Andrew heart emojied this URI pointing to this piece of content. And so you could, there's quite a lot of flexibility, both with respect to at the developer level, how applications are creating attestations or their end users are creating attestations, but then also how that information is pulled back into the app. So they might want to show how many other people have attested heart emoji to that piece of content. They don't care necessarily about everything that's been said about that content. But you know, in an open system, you don't just have to do the heart emoji, you can do whatever you want.
And what are some of the first use cases that you know everyone should expect to see with something like this as the engine?
I think Andrew had a good one. Like I would love to kind of like disrupt like the social reaction feature set. So if you think about it, it's like to elaborate on that point a little bit, just because it was already said, it's like when you heart a thing on a social media platform like Twitter, it's like you can only heart it. You can either heart it or you can repost it or you can comment on it. And then the hearts are like stored in Twitter servers. And then you got to like go through Twitter API to like maybe be able to get the likes of the hearts of the tweets. But what if we could like abstract that reactionary feature set away from the application layer or away from the platform layer? So like when you go to heart the tweet, it's like the heart doesn't live in Twitter servers. It lives on this like open neutral data lake. So like, for instance, like let's say someone wants to build a new social app. Like I personally don't, and now we're edging into like decentralized social, but I personally have a hard time wanting to spend time and energy building my reputation in these contexts because I don't know if those contexts are going to exist in the future. So it's like, maybe I'm going to stay where I already know my time and attention is going to be valuable as opposed to like trying to build up a reputation over here. But what if the reputation wasn't like constrained to the platform? What if it was like neutral and like importable everywhere? And so like my likes of, you know, let's say I'm like doing a heart emoji. This is maybe not the Twitter example, but I do an upvote on Uniswap because I'm like, okay, I don't know, whatever social platform I'm interacting with at the time, Uniswap's in there, I can upvote it. So I do the upvote on this platform. Like the upvote doesn't live in that platform servers. It lives at like the layer of the internet. And so I'm just liking Uniswap and I'm using this interface to do it. And so then maybe it means a little bit more to me. And maybe I'm like a little bit more encouraged to perform these actions because I know that it's going to persist forever. Go ahead.
It's like intuition is the emojiverse. And if you think, if you think about it, it's probably the social is probably where you have the highest density of ratings to begin with. Anyways, it's where you see the most activity. So it kind of makes sense to plug in there first, just because you have the highest, just the highest activity, the highest throughput, et cetera.
Yeah. I mean, we're really looking at use cases that establish reputation. And again, focusing on Web3 initially, but establish reputation for the people and things like smart contracts and projects and DEXs and L1s, L2s in the Web3 universe. And one of the most effective things, like you're saying, is it's just simple emoji reactions to things. It gives us a lot of context. And we spun up a events app for ETH Denver a year ago, where people could react with any emoji to all the different events at ETH Denver as attestations on the back end. But it's just a fun way to illustrate what we were cooking up. But you know, that's probably the best way to scroll through events and see which events have my friends said things about, and is it a fire emoji or a sleeping emoji, right? And that might impact what I want to do. But I think, you know, there's a lot of very specific use cases, and again, we aren't in the business of over committing to any of them specifically, because we'd like to see a lot of different things built on top of intuition, and maybe the killer use cases aren't ones that we're currently imagining. But in the Web3 space, it would be great if I connected my MetaMask to a smart contract and I could see that Trail of Bits audited it, right? And that's a verified thing that they that came from them, or that Billy said the smart contract rugged him. And so Billy's not an auditor, but I still care what he said, just as someone in my social network, or connecting to a person or a person's wallet. What are people saying about them? You know, when I'm looking for where to stake my soul in Solana, right? Just, or like any of these validator lists, it's just the name. And I recognize Stakefish because I've seen it places. So I put a bunch of money there with no better guidance than that. Or maybe I search on Reddit to see what people are saying. You know, it's the ways that we get information about the things that we're doing in crypto land right now is kind of insane.
Given the news this week, it might be helpful to know which projects don't have North Korean developers.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And what are some use cases that, you know, that might not be possible today, but with a system like Intuition could be possible in the future, do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting one. And I think, like, instead of framing it as use cases, I'll frame it as like experiences. And I kind of alluded to some before, but it's like, I want to take my, I used the term friends list before, but I'm going to use the term trust graph now, because they don't have to be my friends. It can just be like voices that I trust. And what I want to do on the web is I want to take my trust graphs with me wherever I go. And I want my trust graphs to be contextual. I don't want to like maybe I trust Andrew in the context of Web3 and legal stuff, but maybe he's not so good at sports. So maybe I don't trust him in the context of sports. And so I got my sports trust graph. I got my Web3 trust graph. I got my podcast. I got my books, my movies, my sushi restaurants, whatever. I got like different trust graphs for each one. And then when I go to a platform that maybe has reviews or something like Amazon, like I can, it's like, okay, I'm browsing for supplements. I trust Dr. Huberman in the context of supplements. I don't have to listen to 12 podcasts to get his supplement stack. I don't have to like read blog posts. I go to the point of interaction. I'm looking for supplements. I want to see what the people I trust have recommended, or I'm looking for a sushi restaurant, or which movie to watch tonight, or, you know, which contract to interact with, or what wallet to use. Like all of these things, I just like want to be able to more easily and efficiently surface the voices of the people I trust. And the voices exist, it's just messy right now and it's not efficient, and I just want that whole process to be like way more efficient. So maybe not a brand new use case, but like a new way to experience the internet and the web and life, maybe generally.
It feels like there's a Apple Vision Pro use case here as well.
Yeah. Definitely. I want to walk down the street and like look at a person and be like, oh, that's like, I know he's 3 degrees of separation away from me. He's got like this reputation. Like maybe I should talk to this person or whatever.
Or you could be walking through San Francisco and all the angel investors have a rating with average check size and a number of deals done annually.
Yeah, very Black Mirror-y. I think we edged into Black Mirror territory very quickly with all of these ideas that we're shooting around. But yeah.
I think there's some really cool things that become possible if we turn a corner into a world where people start sharing their opinions about things on an open knowledge graph, as opposed to doing it on Amazon or in Yelp or Glassdoor or LinkedIn. And a lot of really interesting, powerful things become possible, especially, you know, think about intuition as just one piece in this puzzle where you can have a friend or like influential voices that you pay attention to, that you take with you, and all these other pieces that can fit together with that. You know, and so there's very like grand vision ideals. And I think there's another narrative here that's quite interesting, which is just focusing on being able to trust the information that you consume. So it's not just accessibility to it or the fact that it exists, but who said it. And so one piece of it is, okay, here's my social graph or my trust graph, right? The other is just, was this a real human? Was this a bot? Was this AI, right? And so I think like even in use cases in government where governments put up pieces of legislation for public comment, like it'd be nice to know, you know, have verifiable confirmation of who said what about things. And I think or who published a piece of content or who created something. I think, you know, not all of that is intuition, but I think we're hoping to play a role in it, which is having increased confidence in the source of information. So who said what we're consuming and being able to believe it.
And can you talk through, if it feels like a lot of the applications are going to be driven by integrations, obviously, as you know, a piece of infrastructure, you know, you're not going to get into all the different, you know, app layers. But what do you think is the incentive of a, you know, a new app that's just starting out, let's say they're Web3 centric, to, you know, integrate a system like Intuition?
Yeah. And there's different audiences here, right? There's the applications out there that already know they need attestations or something like it, right? Or an alternative to attestations. And so to them, we can say, we make it really easy to do, right? We have this turnkey toolkit for you where it's easy to integrate attestations into your app. Your end users can make applications. You can query our knowledge graph to pull information in and however you want. It's quite flexible. And so there's one pitch there. And then there's another pitch to, you know, maybe applications that aren't there yet. Like they haven't thought about the value proposition of attestations or comparables there too. And so, you know, for them, it's a kind of a whole different pitch. But I think, you know, initially day one, the knowledge graph is barren, right? And so it's going to be applications that want to be able to create verifiable information and then query maybe that information just that they're creating, ignoring what other people are saying, right? And so for them, you know, it's easy to use tooling that allows them to do that. And then through the economic piece of things, they're able to incentivize user engagement. So if part of what your application benefits from participation, whether it's weighing in on a governance proposal or, you know, emoji reactions to social content, you're able to incentivize your users to do those things using intuition. And then now fast forward one day, we will have this massive knowledge graph. So you can bootstrap your application with an existing knowledge base. And I think that'll become quite powerful once we get there. But that's not a day one value prop.
I feel like governance is one of those places where, you know, a lot of people ignore it because it feels like someone else will take care of it. It's just like voting, right? I know I don't vote because I'm like, you know, one vote's not going to do anything. And I'm at the mercy of of the crowd. And with governance, it always feels very similar. So it feels like there could be a very useful application in governance, you know, being incentivized to provide opinions on it or thoughts, etc.
Yeah, I think that's a big one. I think like governance, everyone says it behind closed doors. No one says it in public, but like DAOs are broken. Governance is broken. It's like very inefficient capital expenditure. Like money is just flowing to just like ridiculous places and it's being guided by like ridiculous hands. And I think there's like a lot of work to do on that front. And I think we can help.
But I think you're right. It's, you know, surfacing up good proposals and incentivizing people to weigh in and participate. And then it's also the reputation of the people participating. And it's reputation that you can build within an individual DAO, but it's also reputation that then you can take with you everywhere you go.
And also like delegate reputation, where it's like, to Andrew's point of like, which validator does he go with when he's like looking to stake his tokens? It's like, I literally do the same thing. I'm like, okay, I've seen that word before. I actually have no verification that even though it says Stakefish, that's actually Stakefish. It could just be someone's name that says Stakefish. Same thing with delegates. It's like, okay, there's a name. I think I've seen that person's name before. I have no idea. There's like maybe a short bio. It doesn't say like their voting preferences. It doesn't say any reputational information about them. It doesn't say, it's just kind of absurd. And then it's just like, okay, well, I don't care about like the friction of like, I can go and do the research. I can go scour the web for like 3 days to try to find who the best delegate is, but no one's going to take the time to do that. So again, the data exists. It's just not efficiently discoverable. And so it's like, I just want that information at the point of interaction. I want to see, oh, like this guy, this delegate that I can delegate my voting power to has my preferences. They think the same way as me. It seems like they're active over here. So yes, I'm going to give my tokens to them.
And I think one thing that always happens is, you know, we have obviously market cycles every few years. And, you know, one thing I've ran into before is it's hard to remember who has ruined the reputation sometimes until you ask around. And I think something like that would be sort of helpful. I think there was a big project, a big fundraise, you know, just today from someone that was considered to be a scammer in the last cycle. And I heard that. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Short memories.
Yeah, that's actually one of the use cases that is top of mind for me, where it's like cycle after cycle, people who scam people last cycle raise money this cycle. And it's like, there's just too much information. Like, we can't keep track of everything. There's new people entering the space. Everyone has the attention span of goldfish. And so it's like 3 hours capital, guys. It's like, okay, scam people out of billions of dollars and then raise an insane amount of money for an it's just like, we forget in like weeks. It's like not even years sometimes. It's like sometimes weeks. And I think it's because of like the mediums through which we're ingesting information. So Twitter is very like point in time, where in order to like surface the fact that maybe someone has a bad reputation or scam people, I'd have to scroll back in time on a Twitter feed 5 years, which isn't, again, not very effective. And so I just don't think we have the right mediums for surfacing and like discovering and displaying the information that we need.
Apple Vision Pro plus intuition.
That's the answer. AI Vision Pro. That's an eigenlet.
Yeah. And talk to us a little bit about sort of, you know, data is being pushed in here. People are going to check it, ensure its, you know, authenticity and its validity. How are you thinking about things like versioning on like a system like this? And how do you prevent just people putting in spam into the system?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And so the answer, to us at least, is that there is no answer. The answer is just like in the real world and on Twitter, where like anyone can say anything. It's the same in intuition, where we are not opinionated. We don't say what's true or false or right or wrong. In order to say like what is spam, you kind of have to get into that territory of being like, we're going to censor these accounts because we think that they're bots. And so we remain entirely unopinionated. Anyone can say anything about anything, but then you just like look at the data you want to look at. You listen to the voices you trust. So anyone can deploy a scam token to Ethereum. You just don't interact with those contracts. So exactly the same concept here. And I think that the hope is that people build distillations on top. So like some people will be looking at the entirety of the raw data, but probably not that many people. And so everyone will be looking at like filtered curations of the data. So someone will have to decide, hey, we're not going to show these accounts because they're bots, but that's not us as the protocol who are going to do that.
And I imagine a lot of that filtering just comes in from the social graph. Like the social graph is going to determine whether to pull in, you know, this bucket of data or that bucket of data based on which one looks more correct or valid.
Yeah, the most rudimentary implementation of that is you can literally just say, only show me attestations from these 10 people. That's like most crude filtering. You can get a little bit more complex and use something like EigenTrust algorithm. And it's like, okay, based on my trust graph, if you're 1 degree of separation away from me, weight their attestations 100%. 2 degrees separation, weight at 80%. 3 degrees, 40%, or whatever. And so just like with these very basic math, you can start to like weight things in a way that surface good stuff that you care about to the top. And then we can just, I don't know, there's crazy complex algorithms these days. Like we don't think that we are going to build the best algorithms to do that. And so our hope is like, you know, other people are building great algorithms to curate the data on top that other people can leverage, as opposed to us playing like the data curation or algorithm game.
And talk to us a little bit about, you know, what sort of, given this is going to be an open network, what sort of risks or threats are you guys worried about, and how have you thought through those things?
Yeah, I'm happy to. I'll do some and I'll pass it over to you, Andrew. I think a risk is like, there's a very apparent and obvious risk, which is the world of self-sovereign identity, which I think we're kind of like adjacent to. But like, it's rooted in this like privacy by default. It's like, hey, if you are making a claim about people, like the person you're making the claim about should receive that piece of data. They should be the self-sovereign owner of the verifiable credential that's being issued to them. They should choose whether or not to accept it. And then they should be able to selectively disclose the data to whoever they want, as opposed to like the data, any sort of data being public by default. When you edge into like, it's really sensitive when you deal with people, because there's all these like data privacy laws and there's all this regulation around it. And a bunch of platforms have gotten shut down because they deal with like open data or like publicly available data about people. So that's quite dangerous, but I think it's important because it's like, if we live in this world of selective disclosure only, you literally can't say bad things about people. Like Zach XPT wouldn't be able to do what he's doing on Twitter, or like, imagine the thing isn't even a person. Imagine I want to make an attestation about Ethereum. Like, who has agency over the concept Ethereum? Like, how is Ethereum going to selectively disclose its data about it? Like, it literally can't. And so I think there's so many use cases that people are not thinking about because they're trapped in this like paradigm of all the data needs to be private. And so I think that's a risk because like we say, hey, some stuff has to be public. And then like, if we are unopinionated and we don't like censor, then things can get crazy. But that's like the thing that is always front and center in my mind. And there's like mitigation techniques that we can take, but it is a risk.
Yeah. And I can add on to that a little bit and maybe pivot to a different one, but it's kind of like the internet at large where anyone can put anything on the internet, right? And then it's at the application level that from a regulatory perspective, generally in the world, that there's a high level of scrutiny of what you're doing at the application level with the information that's out there. And so my hope is that that's how this shakes out, where every application built on top of intuition has, you know, same as any application in Web2 land, obligations to comply with different privacy laws or regulations in the relevant jurisdictions. Because at the end of the day, you publish things on chain, or, you know, you have open permissionless knowledge graphs. You know, you have to decide, do you want to just let it be that, or do you want to get into the business of, you know, tinkering more granularly with the information at the protocol level, which we decided we don't want to do. And so, I mean, that's an interesting one. I think it's maybe an exciting part of what we're doing too, because so much of, you know, this space, attestations and decentralized identity, focuses on things like KYC, you know, things that should be private, right? And whereas we're trying to open up this whole other piece of the puzzle that doesn't exist, or, you know, it hasn't really come to fruition, of these lower sensitivity pieces of information, reputation about things that should be open and available, same as the information you see in Yelp and Twitter and, you know, Google reviews. I think the other big piece of it is, you know, we're ultimately using an experimental economic model to incentivize the creation of a good bottom-up folksonomy of useful information, right? So tags like trustworthy and trying to incentivize people to say useful things as opposed to totally arbitrary things. And right now, you know, it's a very early stage project. And, you know, Billy and I are both at the, I'll call it the Labs Co., which is a, you know, Delaware C Corp entity. But in the not so distant future, Intuition is going to be run not by us. It'll be run by the Intuition Foundation and decentralized governance. And so I think getting that right, you know, Billy said, nobody's really obviously nailing it right now. And so it'll, I think we're going to have to put a lot of thought into making sure that we do it correctly such that, excuse me, the economic incentives that are being applied to the creation of data are being done intelligently and that it's functional. And so, you know, coming up with the right way to build governance such that the whole thing stays cohesive and continues to grow. I think that's another big, I'll call it a risk. It's an opportunity as well.
And so looking forward, what is on the roadmap for Intuition? You know, what does that look like?
And do you want to take a first stab at that one? And I'll follow you up.
Sure. So we have been heads down building for quite a while now, since what we're doing is relatively novel. But we are approaching, I don't want to overpromise, but very soon launching a mainnet version of our smart contracts and infrastructure. And there'll be some initial applications that we're deploying on top of that that'll give end users an opportunity to use Intuition and make attestations and see what that can look like in different flavors. But also importantly for developers and applications looking to integrate this sort of functionality, they'll be able to do that. And so I think it's, you know, anyone can come and use our tooling to build, but we're also looking to, I think there's resources that we can allocate from our own team to help build out particularly useful integrations at this early stage as well. So that'll be a focus for us in the near term. Billy, anything else to add to that from a roadmap perspective?
Yeah, the roadmap is kind of like as we progress into this mainnet period and do all the things that Andrew's saying, like I think that there's like two main focuses. One is defining this category a little bit more and making it more prominent. I think there's like a really, there's this foundational piece of Web3 that isn't mainstream yet, or at least it doesn't feel mainstream to me. Like I've been working on decentralized identity for like 7 years and still like back alley conversations. There's like 12 people. I know all of them. It's like the small echo chamber. And like, and when you look at the research pieces from the media outlets, it's never like, you know, verifiable data and reputation and identity are like the next thing coming in crypto. It's like AI and whatever. And I always thought that we were going to need to solve the identity piece of the equation before we built anything interesting on top of Ethereum. And so like we circumvented it and we did like DeFi and NFTs. And so, but I think like once we solve this foundational pillar of the decentralized web, we kind of unlock a whole sea of new use cases. And so I think no one's done a really good job of storytelling around it yet. And so we have to define the category. We have to like make it known that this is very important. We need the buy-in. And then once the category is defined, it's like demonstrating to people why it's important. And our go-to-market strategy on that front is what we alluded to before, which was the first use cases, making Web3 more navigable and secure. So building this trustful interaction layer. So what we're going to have like when we go to mainnet is kind of these sequential series of kind of like mini games, you can consider them, or like mini experiences. I use the game like term game very loosely, but it's like getting people to want to attest to things about things in Web3 so that at the end of these sequential series of experiences, what we end up with or what is resolved is this like large crowdsourced knowledge graph of information about things in Web3 that's like not curated by us or any centralized party, but that's curated by the community. And so that's kind of like the very near term focus, is making people understand like how important this stuff is, then providing them with the tooling to be able to like incorporate this functionality into whatever they're building super easily. And then also providing end users the ability to kind of interact with this in the lowest friction way possible that actually provides some utility to them from like a real kind of functional perspective, like hopefully solving like real pain points of real users is the goal.
And so, you know, I'm on the Intuition website and I'm clicking around and I see a button that says pray. Is that the best way to stay in touch with Intuition updates, is to pray?
You can pray. Praying never hurt anyone. Best way to stay in touch. We're on, like, all announcements will be made through Twitter and Discord. So we've got all the various mainstream social accounts. So follow us on Twitter, follow us on Farcaster, follow us on Lens, join our Discord. Come say hi. Happy to just like chat with anyone. Happy to set up a channel between us. We're like always looking for interesting people to talk to and interesting projects to integrate with. So yeah.
And what is the handle? What is the handle on all these different social platforms?
It is 0x Intuition.
0x Intuition.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just Intuition if we got the handle fast enough.
Amazing.
Think on Farcat.
Billy and Andrew, it was a pleasure having you today. Make sure to check out Intuition on all of the social media channels, Twitter, Discord, Farcaster, either 0x Intuition or Intuition if they got lucky. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks.